Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Singing for Your Soul radio show. I truly hope that today and in all the shows that we will be exploring information together that really does make your voices and your soul sing. That's my goal. And Singing for Your Soul is, first of all, it's my business name, and I love it. I really do love the name of my business. And it's my voice coaching business where we are all about learning to use our voices well for singing and for speaking. But also the phrase singing for your soul is one of my personal guiding lights. That's really how this name came about. It's about asking myself what makes my soul sing and moving towards that in my life. And so what it's really about is finding ways to live that really make us feel amazing and connected and help us move through life no matter what we're moving through. All the craziness, all of the difficulties, all of the challenges, all of the amazingness, and to feel like our souls are expressing themselves, or we're coming to deeper and deeper levels of self-expression and self-awareness. So it's a phrase that I use with clients, that we use to determine what we want to be moving towards in singing, in speaking, and in our lives, and really about what makes our souls sing, what is bringing us more joy. So I know that I have clients who are listening out there, and some of you are listening because it was your homework. I told some clients to listen because it would save us time in our session, sound healing for them, and then more time to work on the singing and the speaking in our sessions together. So I know that there are clients out there who know me, and then there are new people who are just tuning in for the first time, and then I have friends and just wonderful people in my life who are also out there. So hello to all of you. And let's dive in. I'm really looking at this show as an opportunity to go more deeply into the realms of the psyche and of voice work and sound and vibration and what those really can mean for our lives. So ironically, I just want to say a side note that I've been listening back to the shows and working on trying to get better sound quality. I hope it's better today, but I've been disappointed with the sound quality that's coming from my end of the show. So I will continue to be working on that. I do think it's kind of funny that the show is about sound, and I've been having troubles on my end getting a good quality, but thanks for bearing with me while I work it out. It's about letting go and moving forward anyway, and I will get it worked out. So today the topic of our show is sound healing, and within that we're going to be exploring the fact that our external sound environment, meaning the sounds that we're around most of the time in our lives, plus our vocal health and our hearing, they're all intimately connected with our overall health and well-being. And this is not just me as a voice teacher trying to stretch the point and making it like an important thing. We're actually going to explore some science to help us get there and to help you understand what I mean by that sweeping statement that I just made, that our vocal health and our hearing and our sound environment are intimately connected with our health and our well-being. So we're going to go into some science, and we're going to also delve into some metaphysical concepts as well within this show. So in show number two, that was my first show that I went into sound healing. And if you're interested in some of the groundwork that I laid in that first show, you might want to backtrack and go and listen to show number two. You don't have to listen to them in order, but just so you know, that was my first show where I really delved into this topic. And so I'm going to be jumping off from there in this show today. And what I want to start with is a sound healing principle. You could call it a formula, kind of like a mathematical formula. And this principle is that sound plus intention equals cueing. Sound plus intention equals cueing. So when we embark upon sound healing, what this formula says is that our thoughts have an impact upon the results of the sound and its effect upon us. And I'm going to tell you a very personal story towards the end of the show about this, but basically what this means is that our thoughts have frequency and sound has frequency and everything has frequency, which you'll hear me say over and over again. All matter is vibrating. It has, everything is sound, because if it's vibrating, then it's emitting a frequency. So thoughts have frequency, sound has frequency, and when we combine our thoughts and sound with intention and vocalization, or through intention and vocalization, vocalization meaning making sound, they are that much more powerful, because our thoughts and sounds literally shape our physical world. And an example that I use of this is, in fact, I think I probably talked about this in show number 2. You'll hear me say this a lot because it's a great example. So in my voice studio, I have Tibetan bowls, I have harps, I have framed drums. And when clients are working on their voices, doing certain kinds of vocal exercises or singing certain songs, if they hit a note with a frequency that can move the bowls or the drums or the harps, they will vibrate sympathetically. It's called sympathetic vibration. And that is an example of someone's sound moving through the air from their voices. Their vocal cords are moving the air, the sound waves are traveling, and they're hitting against physical objects and causing those objects to vibrate. Okay? So it's a pretty cool concept, literally meaning that we can move sound with our voices. And when we are combining our thoughts, it's that much more powerful. Okay? And as we continue talking, we're going to basically be looking more and more at all matter and energy as basically a scale of density, an expression or a frequency that just has different entities, different expressions. So we're not looking at things as solid versus energetic, but basically more as a continuum of expression. And I'll be showing you more what I mean by that as we go on. So the sound healing principle number 1 is sound plus intention. Now our second sound healing principle is that sound can have either destructive or organizing properties. An example from the Bible is that they blew the trumpets and the walls of Jericho came tumbling down, right? So sound, it can hurt our eardrums, certain sounds. It can hurt our bodies. It can be destructive to us. I think you could all imagine how being exposed to certain really obnoxious or loud or horrible sounds could be destructive to our bodies. It can literally blow things to smithereens, which is not necessarily a bad thing. So I'm not naming the destructive aspects of sound as negative. It's more of an aspect of dynamic power. Like the way we have reverence for the ocean and the way that it creates or destroys, it's the same thing with sound. Sound deserves that same kind of reverence. So there are also sounds that have a creative or regenerative quality. And once again, though we might tend to attach more positive aspects to these kinds of sounds, they're simply another expression of that same oceanic, huge power of sound and its dynamic expression, okay? So it's sort of like both sides of a coin, right? They come together, the destructive and the regenerative qualities of sound. So that's the second sound healing principle, that sound can destroy or create / regenerate. Now, this brings us to a very fascinating branch of science, and that is called somatics. Somatics is basically the science of visualizing audio frequencies. And by visualizing, I don't mean visualizing like imagining audio frequencies. I actually mean visualizing like doing scientific experiments where you can actually see the effects of audio frequencies on matter. Okay? So there is a fascinating video on this, and it's actually called somatics, and it's spelled C-Y-M-A-T-I-C-S, somatics, science versus music, and it's by Nigel Stanford. So if you go to either YouTube and just search Nigel Stanford Somatics, or you can go to nigelstanford.com/somatics, you can actually see this video called Somatics. And there's also a lot of behind-the-scenes information. They've got videos and text that actually explains more about the video. But if I can just do my best to explain it verbally, what this video actually does is it has, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different scientific experiments that are woven into a music video. And it goes one after the other, and then up towards the end it combines all of them. You can see all of them going at once, and it's all musical. It's very cool. It's driven by the music. The music is what's creating the effects, the special effects, so to speak. So the first is called a cladney plate, and this is a metal plate that is covered with sand and attached to a speaker, and then they play different audio frequencies to resonate the plate, and when they do this, the sand forms patterns because the plate is vibrating and it's creating divots in the plate. So you actually see geometric patterns forming in relation to the frequencies that are being played. And it's beautiful. It's basically how we can connect sacred geometry to sound. Okay? So that is experiment number one. Then they've got a speaker dish, which is basically a petri dish that they filled with vodka and taped to a speaker. And when you play different frequencies with the speaker, you can actually see the beautiful waves that form in the vodka. You can do it with water too, different substances, different liquid substances will do the same thing, but they really like the effects of the vodka best. So then they've got a hose pipe, which is a hose taped to a speaker, and water is running out of the hose, and playing certain audio frequencies that match the camera frame cause the illusion of water that is spiraling, and it's really cool looking. So again, it's driven by musical notes. And then they've got ferrofluid, which is a magnetic liquid in a dish that is affected by electromagnetics, controlled by a synthesizer. So when they're playing the synthesizer, these droplets are forming in this ferrofluid, and it's really pretty. They've got a Rubens tube, which is a metal tube that's filled with a flammable gas and attached to a speaker. And when they play different audio frequencies, then a pressure wave basically forms in the gas, and it creates high and low flame shapes on top of the tube. So you're seeing fire kind of blowing up and then coming smaller. It looks really cool. And then you've got a Tesla coil, which Nikola Tesla invented, and it's a super high voltage generator, as in don't get too close or you will die. But it's this high voltage arc generator, and the frequency of the voltage actually creates different notes of sound in the air, plus you're seeing electromagnetic electricity moving through the air. And this guy is wearing a suit that directs the electricity around his body so he doesn't get electrocuted. And you can see the electrical currents coming into his body or moving around his body, and then he's jumping up and you can see the electricity moving into the floor. But that's also creating sound and driven by sound. So super cool video that you might want to check out so that you can get more of an image of what sound is actually capable of, the way that sound creates or destroys that I'm talking about. There's another fun video. It's called Amazing Resonance Experiment. It's by Brusspup, B-R-U-S-S-P-U-P, Brusspup. That's on YouTube. You can check that out too. And that is another video with a cladney plate where you can see the sound. You can hear the frequencies being played, and then you can see the frequencies, the way that they're affecting the plate, and the sound is forming different geometric patterns. Okay? So our second area of exploration within sound as a destructive or creative force surrounds the research, or as he would call it, the artistic explorations of Dr. Emoto. And I'm actually surprised how many people that I've talked to recently who haven't heard about Dr. Emoto's research. And basically, he's written 4 books at least that I know of called Messages in Water. So there's Messages in Water 1 through 4. And then I think he's got another book where he explains the research, you know, explains behind. But the Messages in Water books have a lot of photos of water crystals that have been frozen. So let me explain a little bit about what he's done. He takes water. He takes it from different sources, tap water, water from lakes and rivers, water from bottles. And he also does different experiments where he will speak to the water, or he will have different people speak to the water, or he will tape a written message to the water, or he will have somebody say prayers over the water, or they'll play music to water. And they will do controlled experiments where they're using the same water to, you know, make sure that the results are controlled. But what they have found is that when they freeze the water, they can then take pictures of the crystals that form. And when positive messages are given to the water, beautiful music, music of Bach or Mozart, or, you know, different sound healing type musics, or a prayer or beautiful words, I love you, thank you, I'm grateful, are spoken to the water or taped to the water or played to the water, the crystals that form are never the same, but they are gorgeous. They're gorgeous crystals. When angry statements are said to the water, or really loud shouting heavy metal music, or different kinds of more ugly type things. Not that I'm saying that heavy metal music is ugly, but, you know, loud, crazy, brash, or angry statements. The water does not form crystals. It's very, I guess you could call it ugly, the crystals that form. It's not even, you couldn't even call them crystals. It's just sort of chaos and malformed. So what's fascinating about this is that our bodies are a very high percentage of water. So I think it's very, very interesting, you know, to think about how our thoughts and the words that we're speaking are literally affecting our bodies, the cellular structure of our bodies. Now, we could also say that sound is doing this as well, because when we listen to music, it is literally going in, and I would dare say, creating a different structure of the cells of our body. A, because they're water, so we could just say, based upon the research of Dr. Emoto, that the water is responding to the sound within our bodies. But also, I'm sure, and I'm going to get into some other ways in which sound is affecting our bodies on other levels. So let's go to another of my favorite researchers. His name is Dr. Tamatis. And I will one day probably have to do an entire show on him, because he's absolutely fascinating. He was a very progressive pioneer in the world of hearing and sound. And I have a couple of stories about him for you today. And one of them is my favorite sound healing stories of all time, because it so clearly demonstrates the way in which certain sounds and music can actually charge and energize our bodies. So we're going to get into that for a second. But first, I want to talk about our voices and what they can actually tell us about our bodies. So Dr. Alfred Tamatis was an otolaryngologist, and he designed listening therapies. It's actually, interestingly, his father was a famous opera singer, or at least a professional opera singer, and a big part of Dr. Tamatis' early years was traveling around with his father and listening backstage to performances. And then he ended up working with a number of the singers who were friends of his father's once he became a doctor. And he developed listening therapies that basically showed how our voices are actually barometers of our health. And this is well established and well-backed research. And his research illuminates that vocal characteristics such as croakiness or shrillness or lack of timbre or having a really nasal sound or weaknesses in the voice, even mumbling, these can all be clues of a listening disorder in the ears. And that the ears, in turn, are actually linked to various organs in our bodies. So, according to Dr. Tamatis, the entire nervous system is actually under the control of the ears, because the fifth, the seventh, and the ninth cranial nerves, along with the tenth cranial nerve, which is also called the vagus nerve, which is a hugely important nerve in our bodies, these nerves are all connected to our sense of hearing, also connect with every single muscle and organ of the body. So what this basically suggests is that what we hear and the way that we hear is actually also interacting with our parasympathetic nerves and nervous system to regulate and control and sculpt all of the major organs of the body. So what Dr. Tsamadi's derived from all of this is that disorders in listening reflect disorders in the body. Okay, pretty amazing. I think it's pretty amazing. So his research is internationally recognized, and in fact, in 1957, the French Academy of Science and Medicine formally recognized what is called the Tsamadi effect, and it's also known as the three laws of Tsamadi. And what these laws are is, first, that the voice contains only those frequencies that the ear can hear. So when we speak, our voices are only going to have the frequencies that we are able to listen to and hear and process. Number two, if a defective ear is given the capability of hearing the lost or impaired frequencies correctly, these are instantly and unconsciously restored to the voice. So without even realizing it, once we learn how to hear those frequencies, they will instantly come back into the voice. And number three, sufficient auditory stimulation maintained for a determined period of time modifies by retention, meaning that we get used to it or it becomes part of us, an integrated part of us that we can remember, the self-listening faculty of the subject and consequently of his phonation. Okay, let me translate that into English. So basically what that means is that if we're given sufficient auditory stimulation, and he had ways of exercising the ear, he created this thing called the electronic ear, which would exercise your ear. And if you could do that for a determined period of time, then you would change the way in which a person speaks permanently. Okay? Which is a way that he was actually able to treat different illnesses in the body. Whoa, right? So basically, we can only produce sounds that our ears can hear. When we exercise our ears to be able to hear better, the voice automatically begins to sound better. And this is definitely something that I experience with clients all the time when we do work on voices. The better their ear becomes at hearing the sounds that they're making, the better their singing and speaking becomes. And it can actually happen immediately. So I could make a sound that I want them to be able to make that's a healthier sound, and then they immediately are able to imitate it. But generally what needs to take place is they need time for the inner ear to start being able to visualize or imagine these sounds. Kind of like when you learn a language, you know how that language sounds, which is why you can speak it. So the inner ear has to be exercised and stimulated enough that it can actually remember and call to mind those sounds. And when we get to that point, then the voice has been changed permanently and we're able to make those sounds pretty much unconsciously without having to work on it. This happens even with tone deafness. I work with clients all the time who become able to match pitch through continued practice. Okay, so don't believe in tone deafness. I probably should say this in every single show in case new people are listening. Tone deafness is mostly a myth. There is a very small percentage of the population that has an actual brain deficiency. I don't really want to use the word deficiency, but an actual condition in the brain in which they can't process pitch. But that is a very, very small percentage of the entire population of the world. We're talking only 4%. And so far, I have never met anybody like that. I have been able to work with people to learn how to match pitch. So that's great news. So Dr. Tsamadi was able to help heal numerous ailments by helping people exercise their ears and learn to hear better. We've been talking things like autism he's able to help people with. So I think that's pretty amazing information, that vocal and other health problems can clear up without any further technical work because we shift the way that we're hearing and speaking. Okay, now we're going to get into a couple of stories here, and then we're going to do some actual listening exercises so that you can really experience all of this. So something that Dr. Tsamadi found was that to hear, especially very high pitches, the body must develop what's called a listening posture. And this is, in effect, what we could call a better use of the body. it's a better posture. In fact, I found an article linking the Alexander technique, and Alexander, F.M. Alexander, was a wonderful pioneer in basically sound and movement and mind-body-spirit healing, I guess you could say. And he and Dr. Tomates had some really cool similarities, one of which is that sound was the initial thing that led them on their explorations, was the desire for Alexander to improve his speaking voice, which caused him to then pay more attention to his body, which caused him to then pay more attention to his thoughts, and created the Alexander technique eventually. And then Dr. Tomates was interested in helping people make better sounds and to hear better. So what we're getting into is that sound, when you learn this listening posture, it actually is the posture that F.M. Alexander came to, which is the healthier posture and movement of how to use our bodies, where the head and neck go forward, the back is free to lengthen and widen. There are certain, for those of you who know Alexander technique, there are certain directives that you give yourself when you're practicing it. So we're talking about better posture, and that listening can and hearing better can even lead to that physical posture and movement. So it even goes to that physical level. So not only is sound affecting ourselves and our body through outside vibration and through our thoughts, but it's also affecting us through our ears and through our nervous systems and through the ways that we move. Yay! Super cool. So I'm going to go into basically explaining sound on three basic levels. And this is going to be information that I owe, first of all, to my own discoveries over the years as I've done sound exploration, as I've taught, as I've worked on my own voice, and even gone into doing more sound healing. And then it's also due to my grateful research through people like sound healing pioneers like Tom Kenyon and Jonathan Goldman. And they get into more of the metaphysical side of sound healing. So right now there's this story that I want to tell you that happened recently that really was an exciting experience for me, because it basically was a linking for me of the scientific with the metaphysical aspects of sound. So the backstory is that I've been doing sound healing for a while now, but I've never done it through the kind of situation that I'm doing it now, which is that I'm doing it at a place called, I can't think of the name of it right now. It's called Sacred Touch Healing Arts Center. Thank you. Thank you, brain. Sacred Touch Healing Arts Center, and also through a naturopathic doctor's family practice. She has her practice at Sacred Touch. And I met her because she's a voice client of mine, and then it turned into us talking more about sound healing, and she's very open to all sorts of different modalities. And so she asked me to come in and do sound healing sessions there. And what's really exciting is that I'm able to, she's referring clients to me, and then I work with them and I do sound healing sessions with them. And then she does follow-up sessions with her clients, and we get to see the actual, you know, she does live blood cell analysis, and we get to see what's going on with the blood. We get to see what's going on with her clients and their health. And it's been really exciting because I've long wanted to be somehow part of scientific research on how voice work and how sound affect our bodies. So I get to be part of that right now. So this just started just recently, and last week I got a phone call from the naturopathic doctor, Dr. Lake, I should probably call her, and she called and left a very excited voice message for me, and she had seen the first client that I worked with that she had referred to me in a follow-up session. So this client has been seeing Dr. Lake for a long period of time, and then came in to have her first sound healing session with me, and then we sent her to go see Dr. Lake for a follow-up session. Now, I just want to back up and say that the juncture of metaphysics right here is that when I'm doing these sound healing sessions, I I will ask people if there's anything in particular, a health issue that they're needing to work with, an emotional or mental or physical issue. We'll talk about a little bit about their history. We'll talk about their goals, what they would like to achieve through the sound healing. But then what happens is that I go in, and I know what sound is capable of, but I go into this territory that is the unknown, the great wide unknown. And I basically call in guidance. I ask my guidance team, I ask spirit, I ask the guidance team of the people that I'm working with, I ask for help from the light realms. And I call them in and I ask them to work through me to help us to both be channels for the healing that is available for people. And I attune myself as best I can to allowing those energies to work through me, to allowing the sounds to come through me, to being able to sing people's songs, to knowing which instruments to use, to knowing where to place these instruments over the body. I have Tibetan bowls, I have drums, I have tinsha bells, which are these beautiful chimes. I have my voice, I have a shruti box, I have a harp. I have all kinds of instruments that I bring with me. But each session is different. I open myself to allowing the energies to come through me. And sometimes I stand and I whisper over the person. Sometimes I sing in a language I don't know. And then people will say to me, did you know what that meant? Those words were very special to me. That's actually a mantra that was given to me by a teacher of mine. I've had experiences like that. So I didn't know what the words meant, but these people who I was working with did. So these sound healing sessions really do feel like cosmic journeys. And it's very fascinating to hear people's feedback when they come out of them, of the different things. And so I'm going to give you the experience that this client, who I'll call Sue, had. Now, this is the scientific side of what she experienced. When she came out of it, she felt very relaxed and she was very calm. And that's very normal. It's kind of like you just had a massage, but with sound. So the way you feel after a massage is often how you would feel after a sound healing session, extremely relaxed, extremely calm and peaceful. And also, like, a lot has happened on levels that you're not even aware of or don't fully understand, and that you're going to need processing time because things have happened so deeply in the body. So what the voice message that I got from Dr. Lake, I'm going to actually read it word for word for you. I actually transcribed it because I emailed it to a friend because I was pretty excited about it. So here's what she said. She said, Sue's blood looked the best it's ever looked. It was almost picture perfect, and a lot of the debris in the background was gone. It looked really, really good. Also, right after her sound healing session, she said she had a hard time focusing her eyes for about 30 minutes. And she's had some kidney issues with this illness that she's dealt with. And in Chinese medicine, the eyes are directly related to the kidneys. So I found that really fascinating. And further related to her kidneys is that she went to bed that night and slept the best she's ever slept. She only got up once to go to the bathroom, whereas normally she gets up 3 to 4 times a night. She has also stopped having cravings for crunchy things. She's had a lot of cravings for things that are not necessarily for her blood type, and I know that these things are related to different microorganisms in the body. So she's stopped having her craving for crunchy things, and she's actually feeling more satisfied by her food. Isn't that amazing? So yes, I actually do think that's amazing. I just was pretty floored by that experience. I actually was guided to sing into her kidneys during that session, though I was not aware that there was anything going on with her kidneys. So this is the point where metaphysics and science meet. I do not know why I sang over her kidneys, except that I felt called to sing there, and that she told me afterwards that she felt clear through into her stomach and the front of her body. She could feel the vibration and things basically moving as I was doing the singing. So let me explain even more. But actually what we're going to do is we're going to take a short break to do announcements, and before we do that, let's just pause and let's just take a nice deep breath, okay? So enjoy the silence, enjoy me stopping for a moment, and we'll just take a breath together. And one more time. Wonderful. So a nice shift can happen just with that small pause and a couple of deep breaths. It's pretty amazing. So just to give you a little bit more about who I am, if you've been listening this long and have not met me yet, my name is Kimberly Harrison. I teach voice lessons worldwide, online via Skype. I also work with clients in person. And you can get in touch through my website. It's singingforyoursoul.com. I currently have a very limited availability, and I'm actually mostly seeing clients on Skype. I take new client inquiries in the order that they're received. So thank you for your patience if it takes me a bit of time to get back with you. It's actually gotten really busy, and I'm between having an assistant right now, and so it's all me all the time. So thank you for your patience if you do get in touch with me and it takes me a bit to get back with you. But I do get in touch with everybody who contacts me. So to give you an idea of what I offer private lessons, private voice lessons for singing or speaking, voice classes for groups. That can include voice workshops for professionals, so going into a business and helping work with people who are doing presentations or, you know, needing to improve their communication skills, especially in terms of how they sound and how they are experiencing their interactions with other people. And then that can even look like voice workshops for yoga teachers. And, you know, I've done some training for teachers in yoga journal workshops and things of that nature. So working with those in the conscious community who work with sound as a meditative modality. And then I also offer sound healing performances or private sound healing sessions where I use voice and harp and Tibetan bowls and praying drums. They're basically like a sound massage, very indigenous, very spontaneous song, calming and healing. And what's most intriguing to me is really exploring our voices as windows to our souls and what I call portals to the divine. So that can mean very different things for different people, including vocal technique and learning how to sing well, all the way to exploring our voices in our lives. If you want to stay in touch, you can join the mailing list at singingforyoursoul.com. And when you do that, you'll receive a free copy of my ebook, which is called 6 Tips to Skyrocket Your Speaking, Singing, and Self-Confidence. You can also find me, Singing for Your Soul, on Facebook and also on Instagram, Singing for Your Soul. And if you're interested in voice lessons or classes, or you'd like to schedule a workshop or a performance, or if you would like to donate to help support our recording and performing efforts for healing music, please go ahead and send an email to info@singingforyoursoul.com, or you can call 310-439-9862. Let's take another deep breath. All right. So, we are going to talk about sound, and there's a couple other stories. So I want to go back to Dr. Tamati's for a moment and tell one of my favorite sound healing stories ever, which is that let me back up. So there were monks, and when monks sing Gregorian chant, they actually create overtones, which I'm going to explain. And overtones are sound frequencies that are within certain ranges. Some of them are within the range that we can hear, and some of them are not. Now, these sound frequencies, Dr. Tamati actually says, are energizing to the body when we listen to them. So that is why when we hear things like Gregorian chant or certain sound healing music or the overtone singing that I'm going to introduce you to, we are actually having our bodies be energized, and we actually do end up feeling a lot calmer, but a lot better and more energetic. So the story is that these monks lived a lifestyle in which they only slept about 4 hours a night. They sang Gregorian chant for about 6 hours a day, and the rest of the time they were doing service-oriented work. So they lived very ascetic lives. They ate a vegetarian diet, and all was going well. But the church came in and decided that they wanted the monks to be, quote-unquote, more productive. Don't you love that word? So they decided that in order to do that, the monks needed to stop chanting for 6 hours a day. So they took out a lot of the chanting. And what started to happen was the monks started to get sick. They started to need more sleep. Things were not going as smoothly as they had been going. So they started bringing in different doctors trying to figure out what the problem was. And some of the doctors said, oh, they need to eat a meat and potatoes diet. You know, they had all these different ideas about what the monks needed to do. But nothing was working. And finally, they brought in Dr. Tamatis. And he found out that they were not chanting anymore. And he said, well, there's your problem. They need to go back to what they had been doing before and doing their chanting because that's energizing them. So they went back to their chanting and all went back to normal. And they didn't need their 8 hours of sleep anymore. They just needed four again. Fascinating, right? So let's talk a little bit about what these overtones are and why, okay? Today we've talked about level one, which is physical, when we're talking about sound. So physical is well understood by neuroscience. It's basically that sound strikes the ear. It creates changes in the brain. It alters brainwave activity. It alters the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system response, and it filters down to every organ and system of the body and even to every cell. Level two is energetic, and it's about the way that sound affects the energy field of the body and what many call the aura. So this is where we get into the realm of subtle energy medicine, and this energy is literally enveloping every cell in our bodies, and when we join it with that intention or the sound healing formula of sound plus intention equals healing that we talked about, then sound can actually affect the energy field in really dramatic ways, and this, of course, is going to affect the physical, mental, and spiritual for ourselves in very dramatic ways as well. Now we're going to go into level three, which is sound and light, the relationship between sound and light. This is going to take some explanation, and I will never forget the moment that I realized the profound relationship between sound and light. I will never forget the feeling in my body, like the utter awe and exhilaration that I felt at that moment. So we're going to learn what overtones are. Now, overtones are basically part of the sound spectrum. So when we play any note, you're actually hearing overtones. If I sing a note or we play a note on the piano or on a harp or on any instrument, you're actually hearing overtones. And what is helping any instrument to have its characteristic sound is actually the way that the overtone series is being heard, okay? So what overtones are is basically if you can imagine you have a fundamental pitch, or if you can imagine you've got one note on the piano, let's say we're saying middle C on the piano, for those who are familiar. So you have middle C. Now, if you play, if you go up eight notes, you count up eight notes on the keyboard, you're going to end up at high C, the C above middle C. It's called an octave above. Octave means eight. So you reach eight notes above. Now, that frequency is going to be double the frequency of the lower note that you just played, the lower middle C, okay? If we go up another octave from that higher C, then we've just doubled it again. So let's use A440, which is what orchestras tune to. They tune to the frequency of A440. And if we were to double that frequency and go up an octave, we reached A880. Then we double it again, then we double it again, then we double it again. So what this means is that certain sounds inherently have multiple harmonics within them, even if we're not hearing them, okay? Now, there is a kind of singing in which people sing a low note and they manipulate their mouths and the cavities, you know, their tongue and the cavities of their mouths and their throat in such a way that they pop up those overtones so you can actually hear them really well. And they can move them and they can sing melodies. So it actually is like they're singing multiple notes at once, like singing a chord, which people would think is impossible, but it's actually not when you use these overtones. We're going to listen to a couple of examples of overtone singing in a little bit here. But what I want to get to is this really cool story, which is when I had my aha moment. So I was reading a Jonathan Goldman book called Sound Healing, and he tells a story about being in Peru during the harmonic convergence and being taken down by a guide into the passageways under the earth that are very ancient and very secret and have been very protected. And so he was taken with a few other people down into the bowels of the earth by flashlight, probably around midnight, during the harmonic convergence, which is a whole energetic thing that happened in the 1980s. And this guide knew that Jonathan Goldman did overtone singing. So he got them down, and he pointed Jonathan towards a doorway, and he said, face that doorway and sing into that doorway. And then he turned the flashlight off, and it's pitch black. You cannot see a single movement or your hand in front of your face because you're in the dark depths of the earth in the middle of the night with no light source. So Jonathan starts singing in this direction, and guess what happened? The room softly illuminated. Because what happened is that Jonathan was creating harmonic series that was moving. Okay, so he was singing and you could hear the notes he was singing, but there were notes that were moving faster than our hearing can hear. They were moving supersonically, but they were moving at the speed of light. So sound at some point can reach speeds where it's actually moving at the speed of light. Isn't that amazing? So I would use the example of a piano to help you wrap your brains around this, because I understand this can be a challenging topic. Basically, if you had a piano that extended much farther than a regular 88-key piano, say it went, say for shits and giggles, that it goes a mile, okay? If you run high enough on that piano, if you were to play a chord, you would not be able to hear it. It would be above our hearing capabilities. But if we were playing that chord on the piano or hearing overtone singing in a darkened room, we would actually be able to see the chord, so to speak. There'd be this soft illumination happening. Okay? So when we're creating overtone singing or certain kinds of music, like Gregorian chant, we are actually creating light as well. So you could see it. Okay? Pretty amazing. We're going to listen right now to an audio clip that has overtones being sung. And I want you to know that this is a bit of an ear exercise that we're doing right now, kind of like Dr. Tomatis, the way he would exercise people's ears, because not everyone is capable of hearing the overtones at first. Some people have upper hearing damage or have lost upper frequencies with age or through hearing loud music or being exposed to really loud sounds in their work environment. Other people just literally need to exercise the ear and start learning how to process and hear those sounds, okay? So don't be discouraged or surprised if you can't hear the overtones or you're not sure exactly what you're hearing. What we're going to be listening to is, first we're going to hear a guy named Alex Glenfield, and he's going to be singing a couple different styles of overtone singing. You can actually look him up on YouTube. You look up Alex Glenfield, G-L-E-N-F-I-E-L-D, and his video is called Seven Styles of Overtone Singing. And he's doing tube and throat singing. So you're going to hear him singing a low note, and then you're going to hear these high whistle notes, or it might sound like a whistle or a flute to you. So listen for those notes. You'll hear the low note, and then you'll hear the upper notes, and they will be moving. The low note's going to stay pretty consistent, but the upper notes are going to be changing. Okay? Those are the overtones. Those upper notes that you're hearing are overtones. Those are not light. Those tones that you're hearing are not moving at the speed of light. But the overtone series does not end, so there are frequencies that are being created that you're not hearing that are moving at the speed of light, so to speak. Okay? Or at least we think there are. Okay? We can't be sure, I guess, unless you're doing it in a dark room. Okay, so the next person that we're going to be listening to is a woman, and it might be a little bit difficult to hear the transition. So you're going to hear some drumming, and then it's going to move into the overtone singing. You're going to hear two examples from this guy, Alex, and then you're going to hear Natasha Nikoprelovich. I hope I said that right. Nikoprelovich? I don't know. Anyway, she's singing overtone aria Towards the Light. You can also look that up on YouTube, and you'll hear her overtones perhaps even more strongly, okay? But I wanted you to hear the difference between a man and a woman doing it, okay? So let this be an exercise in listening and in relaxation and in just opening yourself to being in the moment and to just getting really curious if this is something that's new for you, okay? If you're familiar with this, then just go ahead and use this as a moment to just relax and bathe in the sound and the light, okay? So here we go. Curious what you thought. This is the time in the radio show where I wish I could see people's faces who are listening. So if that was an introduction to overtone singing, welcome. This practice has a very sacred and very ancient lineage, and if at first it seems strange, when I first heard it, I just went, oh my God, where has this been all my life? But I know that it can be a little different. But I would invite you to continue listening, because what we just did was we charged ourselves up. We got a little boost through that. And we were basically hearing sounds that are on a spectrum that is leading to light. Not all sounds do this, but the sounds that we were just listening to in this particular kind of singing are leading us all the way up to the light spectrum. Okay? It's pretty miraculous. And earlier in the show, I had said that we were going to be looking at matter and energy more as a continuum than two different entities. And that's what I mean, is that we can basically look at everything as vibration. We start with physical matter, which is moving much slower, more slowly, but it's still emitting a vibration. And then as things become less dense, we end up with frequencies such as our thoughts and the sounds that we're making, the radio wave frequencies, and then we move all the way up until we are ending up in the frequencies of light. Interestingly enough, we measure sound and light both in frequency of hertz. Okay, we call both sound and light frequency, and we call them both or we measure them both in hertz. Isn't that interesting? So I'm hoping that moving forward, this will be something that you can take into your daily life and start to apply. Start to listen, literally listen for the light. There are sparkles all around us, and we can start to hear them. We can become more and more attuned to our sonic and light environment. And as we do that, our bodies literally become less dense. I do feel that we are becoming less dense, and that gets really into some far out metaphysical stuff about moving from third dimension to fourth dimension into the fifth dimension, which is what many people are saying is happening right now. And I believe that if that is indeed what's happening, that voice work is a very important part of that process, because it's literally helping us to become less dense, which, as you can imagine, you would be less dense in the fifth dimension. So change the way that you're listening to your voice and listening to the world around you. You can become more attuned. It's like those ships that were going when the Spanish first showed up, and because the natives didn't have any context for being able to see ships, they literally didn't see the ships. It's the same thing with sound. If we don't have a context for hearing certain sounds, we almost don't hear them. Like it's not that we're not hearing them or they're not hitting our eardrums. It's just that we're not processing them and we're not aware of them. So open up your hearing to the sonic, juicy symphony that's all around us at all times. You can hear overtones in an air conditioner. I remember the first night I discovered that was really exciting. Or in lights, in the buzz of lights that are around us. Or, you know, listen for the buzz of the electrical power lines that are around. And just welcome them and be aware that they are part of what is literally shaping you and shaping your physical health and well-being. And the more that we open to them and are aware of them and invite them in, the better. Because they're there anyway, and if we're unconsciously resisting them or fighting against them, then that's causing some dis-ease as well. Okay, so that is the show for today. Thank you so much for joining me. I am sending you lots of sparkly light, sound, awesome, juicy energy, and hoping that you have an amazing day, week, month, year, life, incarnation, and beyond, forevermore. I really send you a lot of love, and you take care of yourselves, and we'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.